do. This is an exciting one.
Yes, it's a long-awaited day today. It's very exciting.
So this is the first of our special themed podcasts aimed directly at our friends in China. And this is part of a series supported by our friends at Bayer Pharmaceuticals in China. So as part of their gold partnership with GUcast, we are specifically going to make a podcast every 3 months or so. We'll do at least four over the next 12 months that are specifically geared towards the GU Oncology learning needs of our friends in China.
Amazing. And, you know, Bayer China have been on board. It's been fantastic to have their support. And they helped us bring the USANS highlights out. But this is the first official themed podcast.
That's right. Because the other thing that Bayer China are doing, as we talked about recently, is supporting our conference highlights packages, which have been a really popular part of GUcast over the past few years, especially since we came out of COVID. So these conference highlights packages, we go to big conferences and we chat to lots of delegates and speakers and get a real flavor of the meetings. And
they're really fun to do as well.
Thanks to our friends at Bayer in China, we are going to bring you more of those. Already this year we've done a bunch of them. You've been at
ASCO GU, there's been USANS, and of course, and there's EEAU and APCCC coming up. Yeah, it'll be fantastic.
But today is not about conference highlights. Yeah. It's going to be about our first theme podcast for China, supported by Bayer in China. And this one is going to focus on one of our favorite topics on GUcast, which is
metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer. Well, prostate cancer firstly, but specifically the metastatic hormone-sensitive space.
Exactly, and we've talked about it a lot, but we know things are different in different parts of the world. What are the patient population like? What sort of staging tests are we using to diagnose metastatic prostate cancer?
What treatments are reimbursed? What are the management options? What's available?
Exactly. Yeah. Who looks after the patients? That's right. Is it urology, medical oncology? And so to help put all of these themed podcasts together, we have brought a friend of ours from Shanghai right down here to the GUcast studio. And it's a great pleasure and privilege to welcome you here. This is our friend Dr. Yao Zhu from Fudan University Shanghai Cancer Center. He's a urologist up there, and you've been to Melbourne before. Our institution, Peter MacCallum Cancer Center, have very close links with Fudan University Shanghai Cancer Center. And so what we've done as part of our themed podcast initiative is to welcome you as our first China editor. So welcome to you, Zhu. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Declan and Renew. Thanks for having me. And I'm really delighted to be here to join the podcast and to discuss very hot topics about prostate cancer and other urologic disease.
Well, it's such a pleasure to have you, Zhu, and you look fantastic in that GUcast shirt.
Yeah, I think the size quite fit me, and the studio is quite amazing, and really delighted to be here to join this discussing and the international discussing.
Oh, fantastic. We love having guests in the studio rather than, you know, on the Zoom screen. And it's such a pleasure to have you with us.
Can you tell us a little bit about educational platforms in China? How do the Chinese urological community and GU oncology community like to get information about prostate cancer? And is it through conferences or webinars or podcasting? And what are the popular ways in which people learn about new changes in GU oncology?
Yeah, so usually we'll read the journal articles and read some information from the websites. But nowadays, we are trying to gather more information from the international medias and the social medias. And I think the podcast, you have a lot of fans in China. We are trying to bring the cutting-edge knowledge to China and to our young resident and the young doctors to educate them how to incorporate these new information in their clinical practice. And I think the GUcast is a very nice medium to broadcast new information to the audience. And I'm really glad to be here to be personally involved in this procedure.
And Zhu, you know, In for the audience in China, when do they listen to podcasts? You know, are they driving when they listen? Are they in the gym? Are they out for a walk? Are they cooking dinner? What sort of activities are they doing when they listen to the podcast?
Yes, we know that we are surgeons, so we have break between the different operations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So during this time, we can not only to listen to the information, but also see the different figures and see the interaction between the experts. So it's quite nice to broadcast this information and send to the phones of these doctors, and we can see this information during the surgical breaks.
So the video platform is quite popular there.
Yes, quite popular. Yeah.
And you have many different social media platforms, different to the West. And we've been to China, of course, ourselves, and been stunned by the size of some of these platforms like WeChat and specific podcasting platforms. So we're looking forward to GUcast being made available on these platforms. That's part of our plan for this partnership, I think.
Yes, we'll work on this. And I think there is a huge need to get this information because we are all trying to move forward to a better patient care and more international corporations. So we'll make the GUcast to the Chinese audience in the WeChat and the Weibo platform. And I think it's quite important.
Fantastic. And I think, Declan, the other important thing is really to tailor the content to what the audience needs. So, you know, that's always what we're trying to do at GUcast, not just bring the latest data and the latest information and a little bit of controversy, but also see what it is that people want to hear.
And it does change around the world, doesn't it? And I suppose many of our audience, our listeners and viewers, maybe have not been to mainland China, but I've been lucky to travel there many times over the past 15 years. And every time I go there, my jaw hits the ground as I discover some amazing part of clinical practice in China, whether it's just the size of the clinical volume going through centers, the experience that residents and trainees get doing very complex surgery, the genomics. I remember being there many years ago for the first time, realizing all this tissue, fresh tissue, was being sequenced long before we could do that. So it's really, really important that us here outside China learn from our Chinese friends, and this knowledge translation, as we like to call it, works both ways. It certainly has for our relationship, Zhu, with yourself and your chief, Professor Ding Waiye at Fudan, who generated a sister agreement between ourselves and between Peter Mac and Fudan many years ago. And we look forward to many other linkages with big Chinese centres in the coming time.
And Fudan is such a powerhouse of research output. It's amazing, not just research, but also all the clinical work that you do. But really, some of the single-cell analysis research you were talking about, it's really cutting-edge stuff.
So what we also want to do today, and we will do on all of these themed podcasts, is welcome more eminent Chinese experts to join us on the podcast as we talk about these hot topics in GU oncology. And it's a great privilege for our first themed China podcast to welcome a friend of yours, I think, Yao as well, Professor Ning Zhang, who is joining us from Beijing Anzhen Hospital, which is affiliated to Capital Medical University in Beijing. He is the director and professor of the Department of Urology at Beijing Anzhen Hospital. So welcome, Professor Zhang. Thank you so much for joining us on our first themed podcast for our friends in China. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, dear Professor Murphy, and nice to meet you online. And it's an honor and have been to invite you to participate to the GUcast. It's the first time I in the GUcast, and hope to learn more and discussing just about the whole topics. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to have you.
Shall we kick off? Because we're going to cover a bit about metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer, right from the kind of what it looks like in China to how it's diagnosed and right up to, of course, combination treatments, which is our hottest topic area. So shall we ask Zhu first to tell us a bit about prostate cancer in China and what that sort of looks like today, because I know from across the Asia-Pacific region there's a lot of variability. Australia has a highly screened population with lots of localized prostate cancer, but up the road in Indonesia, the vast majority of men present with metastases. So what are things like across China at the moment?
Yes, so I think in this topic, the most important point to make is that prostate cancer is a highly heterogeneous disease. And it's heterogeneous according to the geographic difference. Usually, China is considered as a low incidence country, and prostate cancer is ranked like number 9 or number 10 most common male cancer. But nowadays, the incidence of prostate cancer rises very rapidly. And in Shanghai, the developed area of China, we can see prostate cancer like ranked the third most common male cancer. And in the last decade, we can see in men aged 60 years old, the most rising rapidly cancer is prostate cancer. And unfortunately, we can see the death rate and the mortality rate in China is still rising. So we cannot attribute the incidence increase to the PSA screen, but to the change of the lifestyle and change different genomic things. And we can, in our clinical practice, half of our patients are diagnosed with metastatic disease. So I think it's a huge challenge to the physicians and the doctors to face this kind of scenario. And we do need to improve our treatment in mHSPC in Chinese patients.
Wow, that's amazing. I remember, Renu, it's not that many years ago when I was in China and I was shown a top 10 list of the most common cancers, and prostate cancer was like outside the top five, like six, seven or eight. And so this is a big challenge for the healthcare system. Would you agree in Beijing? Does it look similar to that? Professor Zhang, are you seeing up to half of men present with metastatic cancer?
Yes. In China, the incidence of rate of breast cancer is indeed increasing. But I think this increase should be due to the increasing of the people's the healthy awareness, which in turn leads to an increase the detection rate of the breast cancer. So you see, there's a lot of the population with the initially diagnosis with prostate cancer is mHSPC in China. And different articles or different reports is about 33 to 76. So I think with the cancer screen, the highly populations of initial diagnosis of mHSPC maybe gradually decreased. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then I guess naturally the next question is really staging of patients. You know, how much conventional imaging are you using? How much novel imaging with PSMA PET are you using? And what sort of challenges do you face in getting access to PSMA PET?
Yes, so in our center, because we have a long relationship with Peter Mac, so we introduced PSMA PET very early, and most of our high-risk patients, they are staging with PSMA PET, and we do find some patients with PET imaging metastasis, but conventional, no localized disease. And I think most of the centers in China still using the conventional imaging as the first staging tools for our mHSPC patients. But in the developed area and in the high volume tertiary cancer centers, they are using PSMA PET for staging.
Is it expensive to do PSMA PET, or does the patient have to pay?
Yes, the patients have to pay by their pocket, but I think the price is not so much higher as in the United States, but a little bit higher than the Australia, and still affordable, because I think some patients, they do need a very accurate staging tool to give the treatment guidance, other than different or compromised treatment approach.
And the other aspect of this is really that multidisciplinary approach to managing these patients, and we've really valued that in Australia for sure. You know, do you have that sort of an environment where you work closely with nuclear medicine physicians to interpret these scans? Because the interpretation is very important, isn't it?
Yes, so we introduce the MDT approach very early in our center, and I think most of the prostate cancer patients, whether they go into surgery or go into the intensive treatment, systemic treatment approach, they will have a MDT discussing whether online or sit in person to discuss about the best approach. And we also have some connection like between Beijing and Shanghai with Dr. Zhang Ning, we have some internet connection discussing about a very difficult case.
Oh, very good.
And I think internet just help a lot to optimize patient's treatment.
Fantastic.
That sounds great, Dr. Zhang. So I suppose that's one of the benefits of COVID, is we all learn to use electronic communication more to talk to patients, to talk to colleagues. But can we ask for your comment on the multidisciplinary approach to these newly diagnosed prostate cancers?
Pardon? That's the newly diagnosed cancer patients.
Yes. So are they managed in the multidisciplinary team? So do you have, for example, the medical oncologists and the radiation oncologists working with the urologist? Or is it just the urologist who manages the newly diagnosed patient?
Okay. Thank you. MDT is very important for all of patients with cancer, I think, just like the Professor Yao Zhu has said. So you see, there are urologists do some operations and radiotherapy and chemotherapy should have a specialist do for the different patients. So just as you have said, PSMA PET CT scan. I thought if the CT scan examination could change the patient's treatment approach and find more metastasis, and so we could have the different treatment options. So we use, just like as Professor Yao Zhu has said, we have a team not only for the chemotherapy and radiotherapy and with the surgeon, also with the pathology and some from the best research, next genes. So the different genes and different pathological characteristics maybe give us the how to treatment the decisions. Okay.
Sounds like a fantastic multidisciplinary team.
It really does. And I remember from my visits to China before seeing that in the big centers, the patients come in for the second opinion and they bring their pathology slides with them and deliver them to the pathology department in the morning, where they have extra analysis and immunohistochemistry and second opinion for the pathology, and then go and see the multidisciplinary team in the afternoon. So it's very sophisticated. But when we speak about PSMA PET, Professor Zhang, and maybe in your center and in other big centers, there is some access to PSMA PET. But for many of our listeners and viewers in China, maybe their center does not have access to PSMA PET. So do you still think that it's valuable to use conventional imaging, that we should not worry too much about PSMA PET if you live in regional China and there is no PET scanner? You know, patients maybe cannot afford to go into the city and pay for a PET scan. It's still important that conventional imaging, for especially for metastatic staging like high risk, low risk. So conventional imaging is still an important role to play. Would you agree?
Okay. Different patients, I think, if the patients want the initially diagnosis with a highly volume metastasis, with a highly PSA, and I think we shouldn't use the PSMA PET. If we use the PSMA PET scan, we didn't change the treatment options. You see, just a doublet or triplet therapy was enough. So, but for some patients with locally advanced breast cancer, or with some lymph node bigger in the MRI, or with some patients maybe oligometastasis, or with the BCR, or with the patients the disease progression, we want to know if there has some newly progression metastasis. So I will use the PSMA PET CT scan. So it implies is higher, I think, not for all other patients. Okay.
I completely agree. And I think there's less importance on PSMA PET in this sort of setting. And if it doesn't change your management and you still have access to all the good, you know, treatment options, then, you know, I think it's less important.
I totally agree. And for many of our listeners to this podcast, they will not have easy access. And especially as what we're talking about is metastatic hormone sensitive defined by conventional imaging.
Correct.
And that's what we want to go on and speak more about now is how we manage these patients. But I think it's an important message for the audience that all of the big trials that have been produced in recent years have used conventional imaging, CT, bone scan. So while it's all good to look at these beautiful PET scans for maybe the localized patients or the borderline patients, conventional imaging is still really
still
important.
Very good, in China, what is the pattern of in terms of who treats these patients? As a urologist, do you treat metastatic hormone-sensitive cancer patients? And has that changed since the introduction of these AR-targeted therapies? Or are all of these patients referred to a medical oncologist?
I think in most of Chinese centers, we are urologists that they are treating the patients with MHCPC. Mm-hmm. And it's because we biopsy the patients and just to treat the patient from the start of the journey. And because of the low toxicity of the AR inhibitor, so it's more easy and more tolerable for us urologists to manage the side effects of these kind of patients. And nowadays we have MDT team approach, so we have recruit medical oncologists to the urologic lead MDT team. So it's, I think it's better for the patients because we not only have the confidence to the doctor who biopsies them, but also the expert opinion and the expert discussing about how to manage these kind of patients.
Fantastic.
And I remember Professor Ye telling us a few years ago that when docetaxel became available 20-odd years ago for CRPC patients and there was a survival benefit, the problem was the medical oncologists were too busy. They never managed prostate cancer before. So the urologists had to learn to do the docetaxel. Otherwise, the patients don't get it. So, and I think, as you discussed at the start, the population of metastatic hormone-sensitive cancer is growing. The incidence is increasing. So, and because, Renu, these AR pathway inhibitors are easy, I think, to learn about, and that's what we'll talk about now, it's really important that urologists all around the world are learning about which patients are suitable, how do you select a drug, how do you monitor the patients, because even simple urologists can do this, don't you think?
That's right, and especially urologists who are used to giving ADT. It doesn't add a lot of extra burden, adding an AR-targeted therapy, and I think the real challenge is knowing the evidence and knowing when it's appropriate to start these medications.
So that's what we want to go and talk about now for the remainder of the podcast is these exciting new developments in metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer. We've talked about it on GUCast many times, but we want to talk to our Chinese friends about the use of combination therapies for metastatic hormone-sensitive. Professor Zhang already mentioned doublets and triplets, but a very clear message out of all these trials in the past 6 or 7 years is for patients with metastatic prostate cancer, we should almost never use ADT or castration on its own monotherapy. So we should always be thinking of combinations. So, of course, it's also varying around the world about which drugs are available and what the reimbursement is like, but it's improving all around the world. So these main options of, docetaxel chemotherapy, it's almost in a separate category, but especially the oral agents, darolutamide, apalutamide, enzalutamide, abiraterone. Can you please talk to us, Zhu, about availability or access to any of these drugs? And I know it's changing and moving, but are we beginning to see these AR pathway inhibitors becoming available in the hormone-sensitive setting?
Yes, so fortunately, we all have these drugs available. At least in Shanghai, it's insuranced, and the patient can get this drug available very easily. And nowadays, we are very much promote the ADT plus, means we can not use ADT alone for MHCPC. And another point I just want to add to the declan's point about why the medical oncologists do not treat the patients with docetaxel, because when we use the docetaxel in the end stage, it's quite frustrating. It's only extend like 1 or 2 months of these patients with a lot of comorbidity. But nowadays we have such wonderful drugs and we can use earlier, for example, these second generation AR inhibitor like darolutamide, apalutamide, enzalutamide. They have different side effects, but quite quite less than compared to the chemotherapy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And patients don't want chemotherapy, do they? That's a very popular theme. Yeah. So, I think that used to be a reason why people were not getting combination therapy after the Stampede trial and Charter trial, because patients, especially in the Asia-Pacific region, are frightened of chemotherapy sometimes, and there are increased toxicities. Most of those trials did not include an Asia-Pacific population. So it's the advent of the AR pathway inhibitors that's really exciting, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, so for generally speaking, for patients with metastatic disease, regardless of the low volume or high volume, we're advocating the AR inhibitor. But for high volume patients and fit patients, young age and quite active, we were trying to advise the patients to receive the triple therapy, because there are also very strong evidence from the ARISENS and the PIS1, and we do not want our patients to lose the window of opportunity. And I think this information is quite important to educate, especially for our Chinese colleagues.
Yeah, but I think the main message is that, you know, for MHSBC patients, ADT alone really should no longer be standard of care. It should be the addition of an AR-targeted therapy. And it sounds like you're doing that very well over there.
Yeah, we are trying to advise our patients, consult with the patients, and trying to make their going in the right way. And this thing, I think, is also learned from a lot of international talks and from the GUCAST.
And how do you pass on that education to your trainees and fellows and juniors of, you know, how to manage these drugs and how to manage the side effects and how often to monitor them?
Yes, so I think one of the very attractive points is that the podcast, the GUCAST, and the social media, they provide a more comprehensive view of how you practice. And I still remember when I go to the clinic with Declan, and he talked to the patients. He communicated very detailed about the surgery benefit and some disadvantage and how to tailor your treatment. And what I learned these things, and I found quite similar in the GUCAST, because you talk to radiation oncologist, medical oncologist, you do not just take about the benefit. You also take up disadvantage. So this is, you cannot learn from the manuscript. You only read the table 3 or table 4 complications, only numbers. But the real patients, it's very complicated.
That's a really good point, Jim, because, you know, the data out there is fantastic, but it's very hard to take away practical points from a scientific paper. And I think other means of education are really important, aren't they?
So let's have some practical examples, because it's not just one drug. In the AR pathway inhibitors, we have 3 main drugs, plus abiraterone, but we're really talking about darolutamide, apalutamide, enzalutamide, these drugs. And so we've all got familiar with some of these drugs in the CRPC setting, especially enzalutamide, but the newer ones, darolutamide and apalutamide, have you any experience of using these drugs yourself yet?
Yeah, I think the decision we are trying to, because the evidence is very strong, they are both the positive drugs with nice results, but we are decide with the patients about different preference. For example, the comorbidity of these patients, whether the patient take a lot of other medications, whether the patient have some brain disease, and if this condition may threaten the patient's health, we may recommend darolutamide for this kind of the patients for a better tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. So this is to cover different aspects of these kind of patients.
And I think it's not difficult to educate ourselves about that, or our friends in the industry are very good at providing resource. Our podcast provides some resource, because we do talk a lot about patient selection. Professor Zhang, in your experience, how do you assess which drug you might want to use for these patients if you have all of them available to you? Have you any suggestions for the audience for how to pick darolutamide, apalutamide, enzalutamide if you have everything available?
Okay, thanks for your question. Is in our hospital, we actually have the all kinds of drugs, abiraterone, enzalutamide, apalutamide, darolutamide, and also with the Chinese ARI reader. Rizalutamide, I think.
Oh, yes. So, we forgot about that. I forgot about it. We should have mentioned that because that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Yeah, that's right.
So there is a Chinese agent that we haven't got access to yet.
Yeah.
We should talk about that separately another time.
So all of the clinical trials evidence was very, very good. So just I totally agree with the Professor Yao has taught that first we should use the all of these kinds of drugs according to the patient's complications. So as used abiraterone, we should use the prednisone. So if have the high diabetes or hypertension or have the brain disease, we should just use the different drugs. So for darolutamide may be safe and also with the excellent effect, I think. So I think darolutamide is most safe. Just there's no rush and for the no adverse events on the hypertension and the heart cardiovascular disease. So when we choose the this kind of drugs, more according to the complications. The other is for the Chinese indications and the medical insurance, you see. So according to the clinical trials, you see for adalutamide, it has covered from the MSPC, MCRPC, and MCRPC, and also with the BCR, more of the clinical trials. But for apalutamide and darolutamide only have the MSPC and MCRPC. So the indications is different. So if the patients with MCRPC, usually we couldn't use this kind of the drugs. And furthermore, for the darolutamide, just only with the ADT plus darolutamide plus the docetaxel with the triplet has the indications for the MHSPC. So the other selected reasons is the indications and the medical insurance for me, I think. Okay.
Very good. I must say, yeah, things like fatigue that we certainly see a lot with enzalutamide in the CRPC population and MHSPC, drugs like darolutamide that don't cross the blood-brain barrier certainly have less fatigue for your elderly patient who's already a little bit tired. Mm. We wanted to finish by talking a bit about the triplet therapy because, Zhao, you mentioned that if possible, in the higher risk patient, triplet is good. But I have a couple of comments for you. First of all, there is the evidence for triplet is based on having ADT and docetaxel, and then if you add AR pathway inhibitor, there's a benefit. But it doesn't answer the question of, well, if you start ADT and AR pathway inhibitor, which is what we all want to do, which is what the patients want to do, there's no evidence that adding chemo to the doublet actually improves survival. So, and I know my medical oncology colleagues, they sometimes push back a little. And also, patients don't want chemo. So you have to have a good evidence to say, no, no, you should really consider it because of this trial. And I think now that we have the AR pathway inhibitors becoming available, it's very clear, number one, everyone's going to be on ADT and drugs like darolutamide, apalutamide. But number two, it's therefore difficult to say to a patient, if we add chemo, it's going to help. Maybe just waiting later on would help. What do you think of that?
Yes, so Declan mentioned a very important point that actually the triple preference and the favorable outcome is based on in comparing with the ADT plus docetaxel. Mm. So we only have this kind of data to support the triple treatment. But from the similar point raised by the Dr. Zhang, we have some regulation to advocate the triple therapy in patients at risk and especially in the high volume disease. And I think the industry, they are also awareness of this kind of question. And for example, darolutamide, they have a clinical trial they are combined with ADT compared to ADT alone,
yeah,
to test whether the doublet treatment is a similar outcome to this kind of disease. And I think it's a nice try to have the results of this kind of trial. But in the end, I think we have a lot of markers like PSA decreased level at 6 months, and the early response of the PSA, and even more, we may have some PSMA PET imaging to monitor the disease trajectory of these MHSP patients. So in my opinion, we are looking forward to a world to de-escalating or escalating the treatment approach, very individualized based on the patient's PSA, PSMA PET, and other measurement of the tumor volume to tailor the patient's treatment. So we are looking forward to more trial results.
Well said.
That's just fantastic.
Yeah.
Professor Zhang, can I ask you to comment on the triplet situation? And I understand, yes, from a regulatory point of view, the data for darolutamide at the moment is based on triplet. But we are very confident when we see the upcoming trial data. Aaron note, of course, it will show the doublet preference. What is your approach? How do you select patients for triplet? Or do you prefer the doublet for most patients?
Okay, thank you, Professor Murphy. For doublet and triplet therapy, in my experience, I think the doublet is the basic, is basic foundations, such as you see. The most important for the triplet is which is the standard of care. The standard of care is ADT plus with docetaxel. So if he plus another newly hormone therapy, will we have the benefit. But if the standard of care changed from the ADT with the newly hormone therapy, and that's docetaxel is, I think, is not important for the benefit of the patients. So, in some patients with maybe have more, maybe have longer overall survival, such as the 50 or 60 years old patients. The second is with the lower PSA but with a higher volume of metastasis. And second, such as the patients will have the CEA or NSC, such as the other biomarkers will be higher. And the pathology show us with the different the characteristics with neuro and oligo or with the ductal adenomas. So for these patients, I will prefer use the chemotherapy, not only the docetaxel, maybe aid cisplatin together. Okay.
Excellent. What a great response. And
yeah.
I must say, when you see those younger patients with liver metastases coming in, that's what we tend to do. We get them started on ADT and darolutamide straight away. So we get some response, and then we refer to our medical oncologists for consideration of chemo. But when we see those patients, we want to get started straight
that's
away
right.
on ADT and darolutamide if we're thinking of a triplet approach, and then they can
see
the
priority is getting those two started.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, what a great discussion.
Yeah,
did you enjoy that?
I really did. I've learned a lot, actually.
Too.
And it's just wonderful to see how things work
yeah.
in another part
and,
of the world.
And to hear about all the progress.
Yeah.
And Professor Zhang, we're very grateful to you for joining us from Beijing. And thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us. It's been very enjoyable. And to Dr. Zhao Yu, great. Thank you for coming to Melbourne.
Yeah.
And
thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And actually, you're here for, not just for the podcast, because yeah. there's a very interesting conference happening here for the next few days.
Yeah.
It's the Prostate Conference, our Prostate Center, Prostate Imaging and Theranostics Center of Excellence, supported by the PCF, is having its preceptorship, which is really good.
That's
lots
right.
of great experts around the world, including Professor Zhu, will be on the podium speaking, and we will bring you a special GUCast conference highlights supported by Bayer China for that one as well.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it. So that's all we have time for on this, our inaugural China-themed episode. We're very excited to be speaking with our Chinese friends, and we're very excited, hopefully, to have this content going out to a big audience in China. So please do get in touch. It's easy to find us. Just search GUCast, and hopefully you'll be finding it on the big Chinese hosting platforms very soon as well. Do get in touch. Tell us what you'd like to listen to or what we'd like to speak about. I'm sure you're happy to be contacted as well, Zhu. And we'll be back again very
Absolutely.
Soon.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. So that's all from us here on this special episode of GUCast. We hope that you've enjoyed all that, and we'll be back soon with some more great content. Thank you.